upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. Today we have three stories lined up here that are very interesting, not earth-shaking, but very interesting stories. The first one is titled, Woof, Spot the Robot Police Dog. That's right. This is funny on one hand, and it's not so funny on another hand. You'll have to read the story and look at the little video that I included in it. I wrote at the top of the story, short of laws or regulations to control police departments, robotics will play a huge part of future enforcement. Spot the Robot Dog is seen as a viable replacement for police dogs. Future weaponization is almost certain. The article states, cops have long had dogs and robots to help them do their jobs, and now they have a robot dog. Massachusetts State Police is the first law enforcement agency in the country to use Boston Dynamics' dog-like robot called, guess what, Spot. While the use of robotic technology is not new for state police, the temporary acquisition of Spot, a customizable robot some have called terrifying, is raising questions from civil rights advocates about how much oversight there should be over police robotics programs. The state's bomb squad had Spot on loan from the Waltham-based Boston Dynamics for 3 months, starting in August until November, according to records obtained by the ACLU of Massachusetts and reviewed by WBUR Television. The documents do not reveal a lot of details on the robot dog's exact use, but a state police spokesman said Spot, like the department's other robots, was used as a, quote, mobile remote observation device, close quote, to provide troopers with images of suspicious devices or potentially hazardous locations, like when an armed suspect might be hiding. Robot technology is a valuable tool for law enforcement because of its ability to provide situational awareness of politically dangerous environments, state police spokesman David Procopio wrote. State police say Spot was used in two incidences. In addition to testing, Boston Dynamics Vice President for Business Development, Michael Perry, said the company wants Spot to have lots of different uses in industries ranging from oil and gas companies to construction to entertainment. He envisions police sending Spot into areas that are too hazardous for a human, a chemical spill or near a suspected bomb, or into a hostage situation. Right now, our primary interest is sending the robot into situations where you want to collect information in an environment where it's too dangerous to send a person, but not actually physically interacting with the space, Perry said. Spot is a general-purpose robot with an open API. That means customers, whether a police department or a warehouse operator, can customize Spot with its own software. State police said they didn't use this feature. It has a 363-degree low-light camera and an arm. For all its potential, Boston Dynamics doesn't want Spot weaponized. Perry said the lease agreements have a clause requiring the robot not to be used in a way that would, quote, physically harm or intimidate people. Part of our early evaluation process with customers is making sure that we're on the same page for the usage of the robot, he said. So up front, we're very clear with our customers that we don't want the robot being used in a way that can physically harm somebody. That's one of the reasons why the company is opting for lease agreements rather than a sale, Perry said. Boston Dynamics wants to be selective in which companies get access to Spot and have the ability to take the equipment back if the lease is violated. Well, nevertheless, there are worries about weaponized robots. Through Procopio, state police said the department never weaponized any of its robots, including Spot. But while Spot and other tactical robots aren't designed to kill, they still can. In 2016, Dallas police sent a bomb disposal robot armed with explosives to kill a sniper who had shot at police officers and killed five. Experts said it was the first time a non-military robot had been used to intentionally kill a person. That deadly potential and lack of transparency about the state's overall robotics program worries Cade Crockford, director of the Technology for Liberty program at the ACLU of Massachusetts. Crockford said they want to see a policy from state police about its use of robotics and a conversation about how and when robots should be used. State police didn't say whether there's a current policy about the use of robots, and the ACLU's records request to the agency didn't turn up one. We just really don't know enough about how the state police are using this, Crockford said. And the technology that can be used in concert with a robotic system like this is almost limitless in terms of what kinds of surveillance and potentially even weaponization operations may be allowed. Well, we know where this technology eventually is going to go because Boston Dynamics is not the only company in the world that can build a robotic dog or a robotic anything else either. But the capabilities of Spot are quite impressive. You can view the video embedded in this article and see some of those capabilities. There are some other videos as well on YouTube on Spot the dog. You can find them easily and find him jumping and running around and opening doors and carrying on almost just like a real dog. The second story is titled 2030 Agenda, United Nations Pleads with Global Investors to Help. I wrote at the top of this article, with only 10 years left and failure staring them in the face, the United Nations is turning to private investors to meet the Sustainable Development Goals. Their utopian technocracy is structurally flawed in every way. And then I said, take note of the initial 30 leaders, that's in quotes, leaders, attending the first Global Investors for Sustainable Development Alliance. That's GISD in United Nations acronym language. And indeed, I list all 30 companies here at the head of this article so you can see who's really pushing behind this. There are probably several companies on here that would be familiar to any American. Bank of America, California Public Employees Retirement System, Citigroup, Infosys, Nuveen Bond Fund, PIMCO, Standard Charter, and UBS Group. The article states, a Republican U.S. senator of a bygone era was once quoted as saying, quote, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money, close quote. And not surprisingly, at the UN, when it comes to the implementation of its 17 Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, the financial targets keep moving. From millions into billions, and eventually from billions into trillions of dollars. At a ministerial meeting in September, Secretary General Antonio Guterres thanked member states for their pledges and commitments at three high-level summit meetings on climate change, on SDGs, and on financing for development. But to make serious progress, he told the ministers, we need to fill the financing gap for SDGs, some $1.5 trillion per year. According to the 2014 World Investment Report by the Geneva-based UN Conference on Trade and Development, the financing gap to achieve the SDGs in developing countries is even higher, estimated to be around $2.5 to $3 trillion per year. The SDGs include the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger, universal health care, quality education, clean water and sanitation, and a green economy, among others, to be achieved worldwide by a 2030 deadline. I might add, that's only 10 years away. At the same time, Guterres has said there is a need to replenish the Green Climate Fund to meet the commitment to mobilize $100 billion per year for climate action, including mitigation and adaption in developing countries by next year. But at the GCF Pledging Conference in Paris on October 24 to 25, 27 rich nations pledged only $9.8 billion to the fund. And one of the world's richest nations, the United States, made no pledges and is unlikely to do so since it is planning to withdraw from the 2015 Paris Climate Change Agreement. But with deliveries falling short of pledges off and on, Guterres is looking for concrete commitments. In his annual report for 2019, the Secretary General was unequivocally clear that, quote, at the current pace, we will not reach our targets, close quote, unless there is much greater urgency and ambition, including enhanced international cooperation, public-private partnerships, adequate financing, and innovative solutions. With a huge shortfall in funding, he has now turned to the world's business and private sector for investments. On October 16, Guterres launched the Global Investors for Sustainable Development Alliance, that's GISD, described as a, quote, a UN first-of-its-kind grouping comprising 30 high-powered business leaders from all over the world. In an interview with IPS, David Hanif, Director of Financing for Sustainable Development Office at the UN's Department of Economic and Social Affairs, said these are men and women who have responded to the Secretary General's challenge to find ways to rapidly and significantly increase the private sector's contribution to addressing sustainable development, including achieving the SDGs. Essentially, he pointed out, the alliance will help provide leadership and mobilizing resources from the private sector for sustainable development. Asked why an alliance was needed, he said, quote, I can do no better to explain it than the GISD alliance members themselves, who issued a joint statement at the official launch of the UN. They said that investment in SDGs, quote, is not happening at the required scale or speed. While investment into sustainable development has become increasingly important, there is more work to be done to bring this long-term and inclusive approach into the mainstream. They went further, adding, businesses need to develop local solutions and projects, investors need to step up their support with financing, and policymakers need to set an enabling framework, said Hanif. These are powerful statements by the world's top investors and banks. By articulating so clearly what this challenge has been, they have also set out to answer the question of how can the status quo change and how can it be done as soon as possible. Well, you can read the rest of this article yourself. I suggest that you do, just so you get an understanding of how the United Nations thinks about these things. There are many people saying that the United Nations will utterly fail in their objectives by 2030. I'm one of those critics. They will continue to make all the bluster they possibly can, and they will continue to send out people like Greta Thunberg to put fear into every person in the world. This creates a sense of urgency, of course, to put your money where your mouth is. But they've run out of money from governments, and governments are not responding. And the United States has pulled away from contributing boatloads of money like we did in the past under President Obama and other former presidents. So now they're turning to the private sector, hoping to extort some money or maybe just get some voluntary money out of the private sector. In my opinion, if I were a stockholder of any of these companies mentioned, and found out that they were giving money to the United Nations for something like this, I would immediately launch a lawsuit against that company and say, what are you thinking? You stop giving them money right now. There's absolutely no return on investment to give money to the United Nations, which has traditionally been a sinkhole for all the combined nations of the world contributing money to them. And they're almost on the verge of bankruptcy right now. The last article brings up a familiar meme on Technocracy News and Trends and has to do with smart cities and data. There's no way that I could say enough about this topic because this is literally the heartbeat of technocracy. The title of this article is Data is the Fuel of Smart Cities. Oh, wait, I left out a word. Your data is the fuel of smart cities. That's right. I wrote in this article, smart city engineers pretending to be urban planners, and they are pretending, by the way, they are not urban planners. They think they are. They think they're qualified to be urban planners. Heaven help the urban communities that these guys plan because they will create a physical disaster if they're just turned loose on urban centers around the world. These planners see data as the essential lifeblood of smart city technology, which technology has absolutely no value or efficacy without the data. This is why 5G is being railroaded across the country. That's exactly true. All of these programs and all of this technology that's been developed for smart cities will not run without data. Moreover, it needs to be data that can be collected in real time, because historical data is of no use to anybody trying to make real-time changes and engineer social change real-time on the community that is sucking the data out of. They have to have data. They're totally embedded in this at this point because they've spent their entire fortune creating the software for smart city implementation. And without data, they get nothing. Absolutely zero. The article states Hudson Yards in New York and Sidewalk Labs project in Toronto are test cases that will radically change the way our cities work through the use of data and the Internet of Things. As I discussed in a previous post, the Internet of Things has evolved to encompass a range of devices from the smallest household appliance to self-driving cars. On a larger scale, smart city developments compound the benefits of IoT by collecting and analyzing data on usage patterns to create a reciprocal relationship between residents and their communities. These projects are not only helping to implement existing technology in more sustainable ways, but by collecting and analyzing data on a daily usage patterns, will also help us to optimize future sustainable energy solutions. Hudson Yards in New York has played a significant role in helping the public understand the potential that IoT plays, that's the Internet of Things, plays in developing a more efficient community. The project features a microgrid that consolidates the power and heat demands of the project and connects the buildings in a thermal loop. While powered by two cogeneration plants rather than sustainable wind or solar power, the small plant that powers Hudson Yards is twice as efficient due to its repurposing of the hot water used in the generation of electricity for heating purposes. The immediacy of the utility plant also reduces the losses associated with the transmission. All told, the project is estimated to save 24,000 MTs of greenhouse gases from entering the atmosphere each year. In order to reduce costs, the microgrid is connected to the city's larger grid and contributes excess power. In the event of a power outage, the likes of which have roiled New York City every few years, Hudson Yards microgrid can be isolated to maintain power for the buildings within the project's perimeter. Moreover, the project constantly collects data on the usage patterns of inhabitants in order to model future energy needs and optimize existing processes. Not only can a better understanding of system-wide energy usage help future adoption of renewable energy by helping to predict needs, but it can also help to optimize conditions in commercial workspaces to lower power usage over time. Sidewalk Labs Quayside project in Toronto offers similar lessons of how smart technology is changing residents' relationship with their communities. Quayside, a former industrial area, is being developed as a mixed-use area that aims to cut carbon emissions by 89% from today's average use. This article goes on, and you might want to read the entirety of this again just to find out how these technocrats think. They're not going to change their thinking, you know that. So learning how they think right now will better help you to combat them when they come to your city and say, we're going to make your city over just like Hudson Yards or just like Quayside. Why, we have technology for you that will make you so much more efficient. Why, it will radically improve your life and the quality of your life. Well, I would suggest that's absolutely nonsense. There's nothing wrong with efficiency in some sense, but if efficiency is your only goal, which is the only technocrat goal in this case, well, then it's just not going to work. Because human beings don't need efficiency as much as they need wisdom and common sense in the first place. And none of this makes any common sense except for the people implementing the smart city policy in the first place. They are the ones collecting the data. They are the ones that will profit from it. The communities at large are the guinea pigs, and the constant goose that lays the golden egg for these data-hungry technocrats. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.